Welcome to 30 Minutes of VOA Learning English, the voice of America's information service for people learning English. Join us now for words and their stories and people in America, coming up after As It Is.
From VOA Learning English, this is As It Is. I'm Mario Ritter.
And I'm Anna Mateo. In the second half of today's show, we will hear about a recent report by the United Nations Children's Agency, UNICEF. That report says violence against children is widespread around the world.
First, we begin with the news that death rates for young children in developing countries have dropped.
Experts have suggested two reasons for the decrease: improved government action and simple protective health measures.
Experts say these measures have helped lessen the difference in death rates between the richest and the poorest families. Katie Weaver has more.
The United Nations says 12.7 million children under the age of 5 died in 1990. By comparison, UN officials say about 6.3 million young children died last year. That is a huge drop, but still represents about 17,000 deaths every day. Aran Ben-David is a population health expert at Stanford University in California. He credits simple things for the sharp drop in deaths among low and moderate income countries. They include malarial bed nets and oral rehydration salts for treating diarrheal diseases. Aran Ben-David worked with other researchers at Stanford School of Medicine on a study. They used population and health studies to investigate child mortality rates in 54 countries. The research involved information about 1.2 million women in more than 929,000 families. The investigators compared death rates between 2000 and 2007 with records from 2008 to 2012. They found under 5 death rates fell 4.3 deaths for every 1,000 live births among poor families. Among middle-income families, rates fell 3.36 deaths for every 1,000 live births. Among the wealthiest families, rates fell 2.06 deaths per 1,000 births. Aran Ben-David says that in countries with good governance, international aid can reach people who need it. But he found problems in corrupt or lawless nations. There, the number of child deaths increased during the same period. The study noted a major improvement in the child death rate between rich and poor in several countries. They include Bangladesh, Bolivia, Ivory Coast, Egypt, and Ghana. The findings were reported in the journal Pediatrics. I'm Katie Weaver.
I'm Anna Mateo.
And I'm Mario Ritter. You are listening to the VOA Learning English program, As It Is.
Now we hear about a United Nations report that gives hard numbers on how many children around the world experience violence.
The report also talks about the kinds of violence and how it affects the minds and bodies of children. Bob Doty brings us that story.
The United Nations Children's Agency, UNICEF, says violence against children is widespread around the world. The UN agency says about 95,000 young people were murdered in 2012, and 120 million girls have experienced sexual violence. It also says the great majority of victims live in poor and middle-income countries. Violence against children exists, although we may not always see it. That is the message of a new UNICEF report called Hidden in Plain Sight. It examines violence against children in 190 countries. UNICEF official Geeta Rao Gupta says children are at risk everywhere. She says the danger exists in every economic and social situation, culture, religion, and ethnicity.
It takes many forms: physical, sexual, emotional. It occurs in places where children should be safe: their homes, schools, and communities. Increasingly, it happens over the internet. And it's perpetrated by family members and teachers, neighbors and strangers, and other children.
Violence often starts in the home. Researchers found that parents and caregivers deal out physical punishment to almost 1 billion children worldwide on a regular basis. They said children also suffer violence at school, with 1 in 3 young people saying they suffered bullying, being pushed around or suffering abuse, physically or emotionally. The UN researchers also said 120 million girls under age 20 have been forced to have sex or perform sexual acts. Such abuse becomes normal and influences thinking. For example, the study found that half of all teenage girls believe it is sometimes all right for a husband to hit his wife. Homicide is a leading cause of death of boys in the adolescent or teenage years. Almost 1 in 5 of all homicide victims are under age 19. UNICEF official Claudia Coppa is an expert in statistics. She says that even if one child suffers harm through violence, it is one child too many.
Violence against children does not only inflict pain and humiliation, it kills children. In 2012 alone, approximately 95,000 children and adolescents under the age of 20 were killed by homicide.
The report's writers said efforts need to be made to change beliefs about hitting children. They said services also should be provided for children who have suffered psychological or physical abuse. And they urged that laws and policies meant to protect children be enacted and enforced. I'm Bob Doty.
I'm Mario Ritter.
And I'm Anna Mateo. Join us again tomorrow for another As It Is.
And check us out on Facebook or our website at learningenglish.voanews.com.
Words and Their Stories is next, followed by People in America. You can read and listen to our programs and download MP3s at learningenglish.voanews.com. You can learn with us on Facebook, Twitter, and YouTube at VOA Learning English.
Now, Words and Their Stories, a VOA Learning English program about American expressions. I'm Ana Mateo with the expression Catch 22. Here is a situation. You want to find work. You find a job that you think you could do well. You ask for the job, but are told you cannot have it. The reason? You have not done that job before.
That is insane, you think. I cannot get the job because I have never done the work. How can I ever do the work if I cannot get the job? And that is the catch. Catch 22, to be exact.
The expression Catch 22 comes from the name of a book written in the 1960s by Joseph Heller. Catch 22 is the story of Captain John Yossarian, an imaginary Air Force flyer in Europe in the closing months of World War II.
Yossarian is angry because so many people he never met are trying to kill him. He has to fly day after day to drop bombs on the Nazis who are trying to shoot down his plane. His commander keeps raising the number of times his men must fly before they can go home. Yossarian searches for a way to stop flying.
He finds an Air Force rule that says a soldier can be removed from flight duty if he is insane. Yossarian decides any soldier is insane if he is willing to put his life in danger by continuing to make dangerous flights.
He thinks he has found a way to save his life, but he learns there is a catch, a tricky condition to that rule. Anyone who requests to be removed from flight duty because he no longer is willing to put his life in danger cannot claim to be insane. He must continue to fly.
That was the catch in Catch 22. Catch 22 is often used today to describe what seems to be a reasonable solution that will not work because of an unreasonable condition.
The book Catch 22 has many other examples of Catch 22, of course. At one point, a prostitute, a woman who has sex for money, tells Yossarian that she cannot marry him because he is crazy. She says she will never marry a crazy man. And she considers any man who would marry a woman who has already had sex crazy.
This is a catch 22, because as soon as a man agrees to marry her, he becomes crazy for wanting to marry a woman who has already had sex. So she cannot marry him. She will remain unmarried until she changes the illogical condition that keeps her in her own Catch 22.
That is what happens in a Catch 22 situation. No way out.
Here is another simple, real-life example. You want to borrow your parents' car for the night. You ask your mother. She says, "That is fine with me, but first you must get permission from your father."
"But when you ask your father," he says, "it is fine with me, but you must first get permission from your mother." In other words, you are caught in a classic Catch-22, a trap used by some parents.
But you are not caught in Catch-22 if you want to learn English. Simply listen to VOA Learning English.
This VOA Learning English program, Words and Their Stories, was written by Frank Beardsley. I'm Christopher Cruz.
And I'm Ana Mateo.
Thank you. I'm Steve Ember.
And I'm Faith Lapidus with People in America in VOA Special English. Today, we tell about Roberto Clemente. He was one of the most honored baseball players in history. He became the first Latino baseball player to be included in the Baseball Hall of Fame.
Most sports players are known for how great they play a game or how many records they break. But Roberto Clemente was loved not only for his ability in sports, but also for the kind of person that he was. Clemente was one of the first professional Latino baseball players in the United States. He became one of the best. He also worked to change the way baseball and the country treated racial minorities in the 1950s and 60s. He stood up against racism and did not permit anyone to be treated differently in his presence. Today's Latino baseball players say Roberto Clemente opened doors for them to reach their goals in a sport that had not always treated them equally.
Roberto Clemente Walker was born in 1934 in Carolina, Puerto Rico. Roberto's family struggled financially. As a young boy, he helped his father, who worked on a sugar farm and also managed a store that sold food. In school, Roberto was an excellent runner. He also won awards for throwing the javelin. But more than anything, he loved playing baseball. Puerto Rico's warm island climate made it easy for the young boy to play baseball all year. He had many skills, but his strongest quality was his powerful right arm that could throw a ball a great distance. While in high school, Roberto signed a contract to play baseball for the Santurce Crabbers in the Puerto Rican Winter League. At the age of 18, Roberto was already hitting a baseball better than many professional players in the United States.
This ability was recognized the following year. An official from the Brooklyn Dodgers team in New York City came to Puerto Rico looking for new, young players. The official, Al Campanas, was pleased with Roberto's skill. He offered to give him a $10,000 gift to play for the Brooklyn Dodgers. But Roberto was unable to join the major league team because he was still in high school. The young baseball player told Mr. Campanas that he would join the Brooklyn team as soon as he finished school. By the time he finished high school, Roberto had received several other offers from major league teams in the United States. One team offered him a $30,000 gift just to sign a contract agreement. Although Clemente had not signed a contract with the Brooklyn Dodgers, he kept his word to the team. He refused the other offers and signed on to play for Brooklyn.
The Dodgers put Roberto Clemente on one of their minor league teams, where young players often begin. But soon after his first season, the Pittsburgh Pirates took Clemente for their team. Clemente began playing for the Pittsburgh Pirates in 1955. At the time, Clemente was still learning to speak English. In the 1950s, the United States was still very much divided between racial lines. Pittsburgh did not have a Latin American community at the time. Clemente, a black Puerto Rican, was shocked when he experienced racism in America.
In the spring, baseball players attended training camps in the southern state of Florida. Many eating places in the South at that time did not serve black people. So the black players on the team were forced to ask their white teammates to buy food for them. The black players would then eat on the bus that drove them to the games. Roberto Clemente had a very strong sense of self-worth. He would not let others treat him unequally. Clemente felt that having to ask his teammates for food was insulting. He later became a strong believer in the messages of civil rights leader Martin Luther King, Jr. Clemente's work helping poor people, especially those in Puerto Rico, became a very important part of his life.
Roberto Clemente stood out among the other players on his team. He was a strong right fielder who quickly became known for his powerful throwing and near-perfect aim. Clemente had an unusual way of hitting the baseball. He stood farther away from the pitcher than most players and used a heavier bat than most players. He was also known as a very aggressive hitter, swinging hard and fast at almost any ball. The Pittsburgh Pirates did not do well the first few years Clemente played on the team. But by 1960, all that changed. That year, he played in the first of his 12 All-Star games. Every year, the best players from the National and American leagues compete in an All-Star game. That same year, Clemente helped his team beat the New York Yankees to win the World Series, the National Baseball Championship.
Clemente continued to improve. He had suffered for years from pain caused by an automobile accident. Yet, even with his health problems, Clemente rarely missed a game. By 1961, he was feeling better, and it showed. He hit extremely well that year and won his first batting award. Roberto Clemente was one of the best baseball players at the time, but he did not receive as much interest from the national media as other top players like Mickey Mantle and Willie Mays. Many people believe that was because he played for a team in a smaller city. However, Clemente's popularity began to grow during the 1971 World Series. The Pittsburgh Pirates won the series against the Baltimore Orioles. Clemente was voted the most valuable player of that year's World Series. One sports writer later described Clemente's throwing, running, and hitting during the World Series as close to the level of perfection.
Roberto Clemente was also a loving husband and father. He had married Vera Cristina Zabala in 1964. Together, they had three sons. Clemente never forgot his Puerto Rican roots. He made sure all of his sons were born on the island. During his 18 years in the major leagues, Clemente won many awards and helped his team win two World Series championships. In 1972, Clemente made his 3,000th hit in the last game of the regular season. At that time, no one knew that it would be his final baseball season.
During the winter of that year, Clemente returned to Puerto Rico with his family. He began to work on one of his long-time dreams, opening a sports center for the young people of San Juan. Then, on December 23rd, a major earthquake struck Managua, Nicaragua. Thousands of people were killed. Clemente quickly organized an aid effort to help thousands of homeless earthquake victims. But he was angered by reports from the area that the Nicaraguan government was not getting the supplies to the victims. So Clemente paid for a small plane and a pilot to take supplies to Nicaragua. Clemente and four others were on that plane on December 31st, 1972. But the plane crashed into the Atlantic Ocean shortly after takeoff. Everyone on the plane was killed. Clemente's body was never found. He was 38 years old.
The Baseball Writers Association of America held a special election. The usual 5-year waiting period for entrance into the Baseball Hall of Fame was suspended. Soon after his death, Roberto Clemente became the first Latino player to be included in the Baseball Hall of Fame. The Pittsburgh Pirates also honored him in 1973. They removed Clemente's number, 21, from their team. That meant no other player on the team could ever wear that number. Roberto Clemente once said, "Any time you have an opportunity to make things better and you don't, then you are wasting your time on earth." Clemente truly lived and died by those words. Some experts have called him baseball's greatest hero.
This program was written by Brianna Blake. It was produced by Lawan Davis. Our studio engineer was David Boddington. I'm Steve Ember.
And I'm Faith Lapidus. You can download transcripts and archives of our shows at voaspecialenglish.com. Join us next week for another People in America in VOA Special English.